Good morning. It is 9:09. Today is Wednesday, April 16th, 2014. If you're listening at home, this is the Senate Finance Committee. With me this morning, Senator Olson. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chairman.
Senator Dunleavy, Senator Bishop.
Good morning, Madam Chairman.
Good morning. Myself, Senator Fairclough. Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin bills? Seeing and hearing none, the first item before us is HB 297, the Home Energy Rating Systems. Do we have the sponsor? Senator Bishop, do we have a working draft?
Madam Chairman, I move to adopt the Senate Finance CS version N for HB 297.
Is there any objections? Seeing none, the committee should have before it the CS for House Bill 297-28-LS1307-C. Does everyone have the document? If you could identify yourself for the record and present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Dirk Kraft, staff to Representative Pruitt. The new changes in the bill are under Section 2. They were brought to us by Senator Stedman and his staff. It's adding approval language from the Power Project Loan Fund so the Energy Authority can approve loans for the Blue Lake Hydroelectric Project, and we're in support of these changes.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Dunleavy.
Mr. Chair, if you could just briefly explain what the bill does, what it hopes to accomplish.
Through the chair, HB 297 original purpose was to recognize the Alaska Housing Finance Loan Corporation. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation is the state's home energy rating authorizing system authorizing agency for the purpose of approving home energy rating systems used in the state. It's trying to protect the investment we've made by HFC in developing its own rating system, AK Warm, as well as the over $560 million Alaska's invested in its highly successful home energy rebates and weatherization programs. AK Warm is a system and software that's been used continuously, updated since 1996, specifically designed for Alaska, and it's recognized by the Alaska Building, Real Estate, and Home Loan Industries. And it's directly tied to HFC programs such as the home energy rebate and weatherization programs, interest rate reductions for home loans, and Alaska building energy efficiency standards.
To the chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
There's an addition to this particular CS on a loan program. Can you describe that?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, I think Senator Stedman would be better, better equipped to describe that.
Mr. Kraft, is it fair to say that you had a bill that had a title on it that could have what I was referred to as a freshman, a hitchhiker, attached to it as it came before a committee? Is that fair?
Yeah, that is fair, Madam Chair.
We have two bills rolled into one, basically, Senator Dunleavy. Are there further questions from committee members in understanding the basis of the bill? I'll have Senator Stedman join us to explain his in a moment. Senator Dunleavy.
Does the addition to your bill, how does that impact the overall fund and the ability to expend funds or dedicate funds to the weatherization program?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, I don't think the new addition will affect that at all.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Senator Stedman, could you join us at the mic? Mr. Kraft, if you would just stay there, we'll understand the bill, and then we'll move to public hearing. Senator Stedman, your name for the record. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Bert Stedman, Senator from District Q. And for those watching and or listening at home, it's pretty much most of Southeast other than Juneau, the population centers anyway. And
Senator Stedman, Senator Dunleavy is asking what the CS provides us in new policy to consider.
If I could, Madam Chairman, just a brief explanation. there's a hydroelectric expansion going on in Sitka. They're raising a dam face to its design height. They're raising it 83 feet. This dam was originally constructed in the late 50s to facilitate the construction and development of the pulp mill, which is now gone. And the electrical demands of the community are such that the dam needs to be raised to the design height to bank more water, and they're redoing the penstock, building a new powerhouse, upgrading the turbines. Well, as we all know, things are more expensive than we'd all like to see, and as we go forward with these projects, this one is no exception. The community is about $40 million short on this project. The state, historically, we've discussed doing a 50-50 match for hydros. The state has about $49.5 million in cash in it. The community then would be coming up with the rest, but that leaves us an additional $40 million to deal with. And due to the fiscal system, or fiscal shape of the state, we're unable to do an appropriation of $18.6 million to do that 50-50 match on the hydro project. So we were looking at other alternatives, and one of the alternatives would be to go to AA and borrow the funds, if the funds are available. We tried to put that package together, but again, there's not the ability to do the cash infusion for the appropriation. So by attaching this language to this bill, Madam Chairman, it gives AA the authorization to lend the funds, but there's no funds to lend, pretty much. There is another project down on the southern end of Southeast that may not go forward because they, I guess they're having some discussions with AAA that may not bring the two parties together, and that's at down by on the southern end of Prince of Wales Reynolds Creek project. And if that project doesn't access the funds, there may be funds available at AAA to access and borrow. If not, this is pretty much hollow authorization. The community is in a rather peculiar position, Madam Chairman. As we know, Fairbanks is at roughly 23 cents a kilowatt, and they heat on oil, and we all know this condition of Fairbanks, and it's not good. We're trying to deal with that. Sitka's not far behind. We're at $4 oil, and our electrical rates in that community should be in the high teens when this project's done, so we're having some challenges there. So this lending authorization, if it is executed, will help a little bit with the kilowatt charges to the customer or the residents of the community. And pretty much in a nutshell, Madam Chairman, that's what this is. We're hoping to have it in a capital budget, but you to have this in a capital budget, you have to have an appropriation. And it's not available. So that's pretty much in a nutshell what it is.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. For the record, Senator Hoffman and Senator Kelly have been here for some time. Just wanted to acknowledge their presence in Senate Finance. Good morning to you both.
Morning.
We have before us the CS for House Bill 297. Senator Stedman has found a title, and the chairman of Finance is amenable to having the two bills combined in an effort to support Southeast. Are there further questions from committee members? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Stedman, you talked about the goal is to try and make it so that it's in the upper teens for the kilowatt hour there in Sitka. What are they paying now?
Right now, I think my utility bill is around 12 cents a kilowatt, and it's expected to go to probably 16, 17. The community is trying to work on a balance to keep the lower kilowatt consumption users' rates down, but they're having to deal with the balance with the commercial sector.
Last question, Madam Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Senator Stedman, as you look at this project, and it's obviously going to have some type of local contribution to it, what's the sentiment of the community of Sitka? Are they in favor of it, not in favor of it? A majority here, a majority there, or what?
This project is well supported throughout the community. It is under construction. They're raising the dam face as we speak. The biggest crane in Alaska is sitting there, swinging concrete, most likely even today. So this project's going to get built. The community's in a position where it has to expand its hydropower base. They have no other reasonable alternatives. to access. The other hydro project is probably twice as large as this in capital. So it is well supported, and it's going to get built. It is underway. I mean, it's two-thirds of the way built right now today.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Thank you, Senator Stedman. With that, if committee members have any additional questions for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, I have Bob Green online if you have questions for him. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, I'd like to open the public hearing on Senate CS for the CS for House Bill 297 Finance, an act recognizing the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation as the authorizing agency to approve home energy systems for the state, relating to legislative approval for a loan for the Power Project Fund for the Blue Lake Hydroelectric Project. Is there anyone wishing to testify here in Juneau on the CS for House Bill number 297? Is there anyone off net wishing to testify? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed on the Senate CS for House, for the CS for House Bill number 297 Finance. Is there any further discussion from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, Senator Bishop.
Madam Chairman, I move the CS for
Senator Bishop, I'm sorry. If we could pause for 1 second. There is a forthcoming fiscal note from AEA. It's the committee's belief that that is zero, but in an effort in the final days of session to move this along, we anticipate a zero fiscal note from AEA, and the fiscal note that we have in your package is also at zero. Senator Bishop.
Madam Chairman, I move the CS for HB 297, version N, from committee with forthcoming fiscal notes, individual recommendations, and resolution for title change.
Senator Bishop, would you like to amend that? We have a CS in front of us, and the CS is C?
Yes.
If it's wrong on your, it may be wrong on your script.
Yep.
C, I'm sorry. I apologize.
Withdraw the motion. Go to C.
Withdraw the motion.
Please.
Madam Chairman, I move the CS for HB 297, version C, from committee with forthcoming fiscal notes, individual recommendations, and resolution for title change.
Are there any objections? Seeing and hearing none, that moves from committee. We'll take a brief at ease. Senate Finance Committee is back in order. Again, it's still Wednesday, April 26th. The next item before us is HB 293. It deals with license plate. The sponsor is Representative Peggy Wilson and staff Cheryl Klein. If you could join us at the microphones. A quick history. This bill was up before us on April 15th. The public hearing was open and closed on that date. And we have the bill back for the committee today. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe Representative Peggy Wilson from District 33, and I believe the bill was just held because someone wanted to add something to it, so I'm just kind of waiting to see what happened.
Senator Bishop.
Madam Chairman. I move HB 293 from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none, that
Madam
bill.
Chairman, was there indeed a question that was to be answered?
Brief at ease. Senate Finance Committee is back in order. Senator Bishop formally had an amendment that he was considering. I believe he discussed that. And Senator Bishop, would you like to comment on that?
You did a very good job. I had a conceptual amendment, talked to the sponsor at lunch yesterday. Next year.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. With that, I entertain a motion.
Madam Chairman, I move HB 293 from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Is there objections from committee? Seeing and hearing none.
Thank you.
CS for House Bill 293, State Affairs, /P, moves from committee. Brief at ease. Senate Finance is back in order. The next bill before the committee is House Bill number 263. A brief history. This is sponsored by Representative Mike Hawker. He is unavailable this morning, but his staff, Cecile Elliott, is here. Cecile, thank you for joining us at the table. You do have a CS. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move to adopt the Senate Finance CS for HB 263 version N.
I'll object for purposes of discussion. Christine?
For the record, my name is Christine Mercegan, staff to Senator Kevin Meyer on the Senate Finance Committee. The CS before you, version N, simply changes in the first section on line 6, changes the date to 2018, giving this program a 3-year sunset.
Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, thank you, Christine. Senator Dunleavy, did you have a question?
Just for the chair, we're going to go through the fiscal note here in a little while.
We are. We have the department here. Ms. Elliott, do you have any questions or comments from the sponsor that you'd like to share with the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The only comment is that Representative Hawker did introduce this bill in hopes of protecting this program for 6 years. However, does appreciate the committee process and will defer.
Thank you. If we could have the department join us at the table to discuss the fiscal note.
For the record, my name is Ron Creer, and I'm the Director of the Division of Public Assistance.
Thank you. Senator Dunleavy, did you have a question specific on the fiscal note?
Through the chair, so basically we're looking at an increase in each of the following years to this program.
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, that's correct. It's driven largely by projected increases in the service population.
Senator Dunleavy.
I'll yield.
Thank you, Senator. I will remove my objection on the CS. The Senate CS for the CS for House Bill number 263 Finance is adopted and before the committee. Senator Hoffman. Would you like to walk us through the fiscal note, sir?
Thank you for the opportunity. We are looking at growth in the program over time. This is the aging population in Alaska is going up, of course. We already have 6 full-time positions that are dedicated to this program, so there's no additional costs outside of our current operating budget for this extension. Growth in the program is, as I said earlier, is driven by increase in projected increases in the senior population. the actual amount of the in the grant line doesn't go up at the same rate as we're projecting the population. That's largely driven by the three different funding levels. And as the number of people that are receiving benefits at the higher level and the mid-level and the smaller level, is that can fluctuate over time. So we can't accurately project, knowing the number of seniors that come into the program, if they're going to be of the lowest income level or the mid or the highest. So this is truly our best estimate of based on current situations and circumstances within the population.
Thank you so much for that analysis. Again, we have the Senate CS for the CS for House Bill 263, Finance an Act Extending Alaska Senior Benefit Program. Are there any additional questions? Seeing and hearing none, Senator Bishop.
Madam Chairman, I move the CS for HB 263 version N from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, that bill moves from committee. Brief at ease. The Senate Finance Committee is back in session. The next item before the committee is the CS for House Concurrent Resolution Number 15, Finance. This is relating to a task force on unmanned aircraft systems. A brief history: we opened and closed the public hearing this past Sunday. Representative Hughes, if she's here, or staff, Ginger Blaisdell, if you could join us at the microphones. We do have a fiscal note. If I draw the committee's attention to fiscal note number two, it's for $8,900. Ms. Blaisdell, do you have any comments for the Senate Finance Committee?
Thank you. For the record, my name is Ginger Blaisdell. I'm staff to Representative Hughes. And I think we answered most of the questions on the Sunday hearing. I wanted to give a couple of just quick news updates so that you understand how quickly this industry is changing. The first one has to do with the question of what's the difference between unmanned aircraft and drones. And now internationally, they're starting to use the term RPA, which is a remotely piloted aircraft. So we might start seeing that a little bit more frequently, even than drones. Yesterday, Google purchased Titan Aerospace. So Google is now getting into the drone business. And it's an aircraft about the size of a Boeing 767. It carries solar panels to keep it operating, It can stay in flight for more than 2 years without landing, and they'll be using that to help project basically data interaction in places where there are no telephone cables or other kinds of data transfer equipment. Can deliver data up to 1 gigabyte per second, so we might be able to use our cell phones anywhere in the world soon. One of the other things was the use of hobbyist aircraft as compared to a commercial quality aircraft. The Phantom Quadcopter is a little four-rotor helicopter that's manufactured in China. And right now, Amazon has reported they're selling about 15,000 per month. So that's sort of the infiltration of just one model of unmanned aircraft. And just yesterday, I found out that there's somebody here in the building that has 2 unmanned aircraft in his office. So they're everywhere. The nice thing about the Phantom Quadcopter is that the industry is realizing that there are safety concerns, and they have programmed a new software application for those little quadcopters that include no-fly zones that are keeping it away from, at this time, 350 airports around the world. So the industry is starting to really take a proactive approach to this new technology. And that's just yesterday's update. So it is moving quickly, and we appreciate the committee looking at the task force and continuing it.
Thank you. Are there questions on the bill before us relating to the task force of unmanned aircraft systems? Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Ms. Blaisdell, if I could get your update notes from my office, because I wasn't able to write the RPA acronym down fast enough, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
Certainly.
Thank you. Questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, Senator Bishop.
Madam Chairman, I move HCR 15 from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Be version O?
Yes.
Thank you.
Version
O. Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, the CAS for House Concurrent Resolution Number 15, Finance 28-LS1190/O, moves from committee. Brief at ease.
we're going to bring Senate Finance back to order. See, our next bill before us is Senate Bill, I'm sorry, House Bill 268, Big Bull Moose Derby. We heard this last Sunday. Representative Wilson, if you want to join us, please. Representative Wilson is the sponsor. Let's see, we had questions and discussion on this again on Sunday. Is there any additional questions, comments? Okay. Everybody's good? All right. That was easy. Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I move the CS for House Bill Number 268, Finance 28-LS0851/P from committee with attached zero fiscal note and individual committee recommendations.
Okay, is there any objections? Bill moving out of committee? Seeing, hearing none. Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, House Bill 121, this is Commercial Fishing and Agricultural Bank. We have not heard this bill yet, so this will be a new bill. We do have the sponsor of the bill, Representative Feige, and his trusty staff. Welcome, the Senate Finance, Representative Feige. So if you could explain the bill to us and what it does and why we should support it. The floor is yours, Representative Feige.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and thank you for hearing House Bill 121. The Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank is a great example of the government starting a project and then stepping back and allowing the project to succeed in the public sector, I'm sorry, in the private sector. Created 34 years ago, the bank was created by an initial investment of $32 million from the state. As required by the creating statutes, the bank has repaid the state's investment and is now a private entity owned by its members. Because the bank was created under specific statutes, it is not regulated the same as other banks and credit unions operating in Alaska. The specific statutes that created CFAB assure that it continues to fulfill its original purpose of assisting the commercial fishing and agriculture industry. The bank's board of directors desires to improve the operating ability of the bank by requesting several changes in those operating statutes. House Bill 121 expands the types of loans the bank can give to commercial tourism and natural resources industries and removes the maximum loan amounts provided to these borrowers. House Bill 121 also expands the category of borrowers to include non-resident owned businesses that are physically located within Alaska. It expands the eligibility of the bank's small loan program and gives the board the ability to set its own compensation level. Finally, to provide CFAB with additional resources to capitalize its ability to provide loans to its members, the CFAB board is requesting the Alaska Banking Commission to begin auditing the bank's operations, as is done with other banks in the state. The cost of the audits are borne by the bank and are not a cost to the state. Mike Pasco and my staff will now provide a sectional analysis of this bill, followed by a short presentation by Bank President Leah Klingert and board member Mr. Doug Glenn.
Okay, thank you, Representative Feige. Go ahead, if you'll put your name on the record, Mike.
For the record, Michael Pasco, staff to Representative Feige. Just quickly go through the sectional analysis of the bill. Section 1 restricts board member requirements to them being a state resident and also the requirements of Alaska Statute 3905.11, which is the restrictions that are placed on appointments to board and commissions. And this was a provision added in the House Finance Committee. Section 2 adjusts the lending power of the bank by eliminating the borrowing limits on certain types of loans. It also removes the residency requirement for certain types of capital loans if the facility is located in the state and expands those loans. It also makes loans available for certain tourist operations and operations dedicated to the development or exploration of natural resources. Section 3 requires the bank to consider whether the principles of conservation and sustained yield will limit the ability to repay a loan when the collateral will primarily be used in a salmon fishery. This provision was added by House Finance. Section 4 adds commercial agriculture to the current provisions allowing loans to non-members. Section 5 and 6, again, pertaining to loans to non-members, changes the dollar limitation on the loans to non-members from $25,000 to $50,000. It also increases the debt capital ratio of loans to non-members to 25% of the total bank assets. Section 7 is conforming language containing to the bank examinations that are added in Section 9 and also corrects a change by legislative legal in the language. Section 8 allows the bank to make available a list of eligible members that can serve on the board to the membership for purposes of electing board members. And Section 9 provides that the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development shall examine the bank at least once every 36 months, as it does with other banks in the state. Section 10 repeals a limitation on the compensation of directors that's currently in statute and allows the board to then set the compensation for the board members. And previously there was a prohibition on lobbying, or there is a prohibition on lobbying by the bank. The bank had requested that provision be removed in statute, but that was changed, so it's no longer in the bill. And then Section 11 simply delays the examinations to 1 year after the effective date of the act, so that the bank can be sure that it's complying with the requirements of the Banking Commission. And then Section 10 makes the act effective immediately upon enactment. I'd be happy to answer any questions on the bill content.
Okay, questions, committee members? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Feige, I guess one of the questions that always comes up when you're dealing with a lending institution is, what is the default rate that CFAB has at the present time in houses compared to, say, it was 5, 10, 15 years ago?
Senator Olson, through the chair, I'm not sure the exact number. I understand that it's relatively low, but the president of the bank, who will follow us, can certainly answer that question.
I continue, Mr. Chairman.
Sure, please.
As you look at the fishing, obviously, is a very big factor in my district. This is most of my village are all along the coast. In fact, I was a commercial fisherman a number of years ago, before permits were required. Now, I was wondering, are there any fishing organizations that are out there, or the fishermen in particular, that are in favor of this bill, not in favor of this bill, or has anybody voiced any position on it?
Again, for the record, Michael Pascal, staff representative, Feige. There have not been any outside groups that have expressed any direct position on this bill, either in favor of or against it, because essentially it affects only the operation of the bank itself, and with respect to fisheries, it really doesn't change anything pertaining to the policies to loaning to fishing industry. It's other industries.
And last question, Mr. Chairman, has to do with you're pulling out the inability to go in and lobby on behalf of the bank in this bill. What's the reason for that?
Through the chair, Senator Olson. The bank, when it was created, there were state funds involved in the operation of the bank. Through the policy that created the bank, or statute that created the bank, one of the requirements was is that the bank paid back that money. So the state no longer has an ownership interest in the bank because that task was accomplished. The governor currently appoints two members to the board on the bank. The other members are elected, all of which have to be members of the bank. It operates as a private for-profit corporation, and they had an interest in being able to have someone here in Juneau to watch legislation and conduct that type of activity. But being a bank, an organization with 10 employees, having someone down here for days at a time interferes with their operations. They were interested in being able to hire a representative to do that. By definition, that would be a lobbyist. So that is their interest.
Last question, Mr. Chairman. I'm assuming that other banks are also have lobbyists on their behalf as well. Is that correct?
Senator Olson, to the chair, that would be correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a couple of clarifying questions. I'm on page 4, and I just have a concern with the familiarity of those who are receiving the loan and those who are making the loan. So under 15, and maybe I'm just misunderstanding what I'm reading, but under 15C, at least one of the primary obligors of the loan needs to be a member of the bank. So that's not necessarily an executive, that's just a member of the bank. You have to have an account with the bank, or is there some other kind of connection? I want to understand that a little bit better.
Senator Faircloth, through the chair, if we look at the provisions that are being expanded in one section of this bill pertaining to non-members, obviously a non-member can get a limited loan up to $50,000 if this bill is passed. All of the other loans that are provided by the bank require that the member, that the person obtaining the loan be a member of the bank. To be a member of the bank, you have to purchase one share of Class A stock and have to pay a fee if on your loan approval equal to 2% of the loan, I believe up to a maximum of $2,500. It's as typical of most membership type banks to have those provisions. That makes you a member of the bank. And so it's a transaction that occurs all at one time. Once you pay off your loan, then you're no longer a member of the bank.
Anything else, Senator Faircloth?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Feige, what's the problem? What happened that is the catalyst for someone requesting these changes of the state of Alaska? Specifically, we start calling out, it appears that somewhere during transactions that married couples were excluded, and so now we're explicitly calling them out, that we can make a loan to individuals, including people who are married. So what's happening with the, it's new language, so maybe that would be for the president of the bank versus
Senator Faircloth, through the chair. The, the provisions that the bill is trying to change simply expands the ability to loan larger amounts of money to the tourism and natural resources industries, and it also allows to allows the bank to expand their ability to loan money to tourism and natural resources industries who are not necessarily all Alaska residents. They have to have they will have to have operations in the state, they will have to have facilities within the state, and they will have to be members of the bank. But it basically it broadens the market that they can make loans to. Now, as far as the married couples, that was part of the original loan language in that section. The original statute language, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, it's a new amended language in the bill, but it may be referring to other language that exists in state statute. That's why I was calling it out. So I'm not sure. My next question is on page 6, and I believe Representative Feige, your staff referred to an increased funding ratio for the debt. And so I thought that I heard you say that you could extend to 25% of your asset base now. And I'm wondering how, if that is a standard business practice, because I thought your debt ratio was supposed to be significantly lower than that.
Senator Faircloth, through the chair, let's see.
I wrote my question down on page 6. It might not have happened. It was the timing of your the comment.
Thank you, sir. Senator Faircloth, through the chair, starting on the bottom of page 5 of the bill, you're dealing in section 4. That particular section in the law deals with loans made to non-members of the bank, and those loans to non-members were originally restricted to simply commercial fishing. Now we're expanding those to not only commercial fishing but commercial agriculture, and those are in areas that are essentially remote and otherwise would present a difficult economic position to that banks would not normally make loans to. In Section 5, simply expanding the maximum amount of a loan made to a non-member, and in Section 6, basically raising the percentage of the bank's overall capital that can be loaned out, raising it from 8% to 25%. Again, all pertaining to loans made to non-members of the bank.
Mr. Chairman,
sure.
You're raising from 8% to 25%. That's financially much riskier and not standard business practice. I'm wondering why the state of Alaska, we're looking at 8 to 10% of your asset base for risk as a AAA rating. And so when you risk 25% of your assets, that's a significant risk no matter what you're doing. And so I'm just wondering why you would propose such a jump. It's just riskier and it's increasing the risk of the money.
Senator Faircloth, through the chair, I guess I'll defer to the bank president, but we're talking about the capital of the bank, and that's the purpose of the bank, is to loan out its capital. It's simply limiting the amount of the total capital that can be loaned to non-members.
I'm aware. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just, my question is, what are we going to use for a definition of a resident of the state?
Senator Bishop, through the chair, I would have to look into the statutes and give you the specific citation, but it references existing laws as to what residents are.
Thank you. And I'd be curious, you know, I'd like to have that. Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm sorry.
Sure.
No. Would like to have that information. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any other questions at this time? So you said yes. Representative Feige, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to Senator Faircloth, again, through the chair, as to your question regarding married couples, if you go to page one of the bill, the very last line, section two, that was part of the original statutes. So the amendments are simply in line with the existing statute as it was originally drawn up.
Okay. And you want somebody to testify? You said that. Hold on just a second. What's the name?
Lee Klingert, Mr. Chairman. She's okay. The president of the bank.
Okay, excellent. Let me ask you just a couple questions. You said this bill's gone through a lot of changes as it's worked its way through the House.
There were a number of amendments made during the committee process, yes. Yeah.
And all of those were amenable to you as a sponsor? Or?
We accepted them as part of the committee process, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you very much. All right. Yes. Is it Leela? Sorry. Yeah, there you are. If you could join us, please. Welcome. I don't think we've met. And if you could please put your name on the record and your affiliation and proceed with your testimony, please.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Lee Klingert, and I am the president of Alaska Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank, also referred to as CFAP. And first off, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity and for you hearing the bill today. CFAP is a privately owned and operated financing cooperative that provides loans to residents that are involved in the commercial fishing, agricultural, tourism, and resource-based industries of Alaska. We're a product of legislation that was introduced in the late 70s and operate today and are the sole subject of AS 4481, which is why you have before you today House Bill 121. CFAP is committed and structured to serve resident individuals and smaller companies in a highly focused and specialized manner. Many of our members and borrowers would not otherwise have access to loan funds in a reasonable and constructive terms. The changes requested in House Bill 121 seek to provide a level playing field in our lending authority for all of the industries and markets that CFAP serves, as well as to allow CFAP the same discretion as other small businesses. We really take no issue with any of the amendments made to House Bill 121. I would have to say, with the exception of the lobbyist issue. CFAB is 100% owned by its membership, allowing CFAB to engage a lobbyist to assist them deal with and monitor issues that could potentially impact CFAB, we believe is appropriate given our structure, and does so without utilizing any state funds or resources. It is simply the most cost-effective way we have of handling these matters. With that said, I say that on behalf of management and the board, CFAB supports the legislation and asks that you do the same. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Senator Fricklow.
Welcome. Nice to see you again. Can you, I still have questions on page 6, section 6, mm-hmm. on the increase from 8% of your total ratio of assets to debt, moving that to 25%. Can you speak to that? Why would the board think that that's a good risk, and why it seems like you're opening yourself up to some higher risk?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Fairclough. I think when you think of the traditional banking model, that would probably where you would those concerns would be raised, in that most banks deal with depositors' money. And so when you're dealing with a depositor's funds, you have to be a little bit more careful. CFAB, by its very nature, all of our capital is lent out. In fact, beyond our capital, we borrow monies and then in turn lend those out. So, and you're correct, it's very risky, and it's even riskier in the sense that we are concentrated in such volatile industries, which is why the state felt necessary to create us, because the access to this type of financing by these individuals really didn't exist at the time CFAB was created. So you're right, it is risky. This particular section, what it does is allows us to make loans to non-members, and Mr. Pascal had mentioned that when you become a member of CFAB, because we are a co-op, you're required to make a financial investment in the co-op. That's part of our capital. And so for some of these individuals in the rural areas, that was cost prohibitive for them. So that original part of the statute was put in there when we could do $25,000 for fishing to help us assist these people in those areas without them having to take on the financial burden. So this expands that, and it increases it to agriculture, because we feel that, you know, it's part of our mission that we should be serving these parts of the state and these individuals. And I think our record of lending and you know, even though we recognize the risk, we're specialized, and I think we mitigate it as best we can.
Senator Perico?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're actually almost tripling it, though.
Yes.
I mean, it's a 17% increase. You're not trying it out and moving it up. You're tripling your risk.
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, that's right. And again, that it would take it, based on our capital today, it would be a maximum of $5 million, which would represent right now less than 10% of our total loan portfolio. Would the demand be there for that? That's another question. And so we would have to gauge that. This says that we can do it from a management standpoint. Would we do it? That's a whole other question.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman. On this particular proposal in Section 6, did you have unanimous support of the Board of Directors in making that proposal to come forward?
Through the Chair, Senator Fairclough, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Additional questions? Senator Olson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you look at the issue, I guess one of the things I was wondering, what is your background in banking? Can you just kind of give us an update on your expertise, how many years you've been dealing with lending institutions and those kind of things to establish your credentials?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, you're going to make me date myself here. I have been in banking since I was in high school, my entire career. I started out in the operational side of banking. I also spent a few years working for the government in lending, and then with a couple of private institutions. However, I have been with CFAB now for 26 years.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
I guess one of the concerns I have, as was voiced by Senator Faircoff, is that you start to go ahead and get into risky situations. And I lived through one of the Bank of the North when they went under back a number of years ago and had a bunch of money tied up in there. I guess a concern is always there about risking situation. Now, I realize it was a private institution with dealing with depositors' money. It happened to be my money. Mm-hmm. In this particular case, I also look at this as essentially depositors' money as well, in that it's the fishermen's and the agricultural people that are also have a vested interest. And it doesn't concern you about tripling the number that's out there?
Through the chair, Senator Olson. I mean, any part of that, I agree, has concern. And for CFAB, it's always a constant balance to stay true to our mission, which is to serve these individuals in those outlying areas, as well as to stay financially sound. And for those of you who aren't familiar with us, CFAB's early years were very sketchy, and in fact, the bank almost did not make it through the 80s like a lot of other institutions. But I believe that the mission, as well as the staff and CFAB's commitment to remaining financially sound in our history, shows that I think that that's a responsibility that we take very seriously. And I agree, it's risky. And I also agree that pretty much every loan we make is risky just because of the industries we're making it to. And we follow a very sound credit practice in doing so.
Mr. Chairman, well, the last question has to do with lobbying. Mm-hmm. You seem to have voiced some reservations about the lobbying aspect or section of this bill. Was that indeed the case? And if it was, can you just articulate what they might be so that we can... Obviously, we here at the table are very familiar with lobbyists, some good and some even better. And so... If you could just articulate what your thoughts and ideas are on it as we look at this, you know, it's a very sensitive issue.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I appreciate that it's a sensitive issue, and you know, it's first of all, I just want to emphasize that CFAB is a private company at this point. We pay taxes, even though we operate under the state statute. We're private, and we're small in numbers. I have a staff of less than 10 people right now, and so the commitment of time, financial resources. You know, make it very difficult, not only, you know, to sponsor legislation, because that's how we have to deal with it. If we want to change our business plan, we have to have legislation. And you know, Senator Coghill and Representative Feige have been very generous in taking this up. But the other side of it is, and I really don't want to pick off a scab here or, you know, get into an area that's sensitive, but the location makes it very difficult. If you were on the road system, I could stop in the middle of the day and drive out here and deal with these things. But right now, taking 2 to 3 days from our schedule, and for me, it's my job, but I have my director, Glenn, here with me, and it interrupts with his job. So, I understand, and I guess maybe it would help me if I could understand why it would be objected to as a private company for us to have the same rights that every other private company have. But, you know, it's just a matter of time and resources. It's not that I don't like coming down here and seeing everyone. It's just it's not convenient.
My last question, Mr. Chairman, has to do with people that are taking out loans from your institution. How many of those, and I like the idea that you have got a lending facility that goes out to people that are less than conventional at times in a very volatile market, whether the price of fish is up, down, whether the price of crops are up or down, those kind of things. How many people are those that the bank deals with now are rural people that are not connected to the road system that you're servicing? Do you have any idea?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I would be guessing, but I would say that you know, roughly probably 50% of our membership is in rural areas, you know. And when I say rural, on the Kenai, although not as much today as in the past.
Well, thank you for your efforts. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Fairclough.
Leela, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you talk to us about the number of loans that you would typically issue in a year and what your default rate is?
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough. The number of loans we typically do that we actually make is roughly 60 a year. We will review probably 120 applications, but only 60 of them will be made roughly. The default rate right now is, you know, fluctuates month to month between 2 to 4%.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you. Leela, you mentioned that you're still under the state statute. What support, if any, do you get from the state?
Chairman Meyer, I would say, you know, this process, we get a lot of support. It's kind of a double-edged sword because there's a department of the state that is probably our largest competitor, and so that makes it difficult. We do have, you'll see, the support from the banking and examiner that they, you know, helped us to put through the provision that will examine us again that was removed in 2003. So. And there are various agencies that we work closely with, and I think with the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission and stuff. So the people in general, we get a lot of support, but so overall, I would say. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think it does. I think it does. Senator Fairclough?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Leela, what kind of assets are you invested in, or do you use investments other than loans to secure your assets?
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, the majority of our assets, I would say 98% of it, is our loans. We do have a building that we own where our office is located in Anchorage. But
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you. Additional questions? Was there anyone to testify? Okay. Yeah, we do have the Department of Commerce, Division of Banking Securities, Kevin Anselm, online if there's questions for him. Okay, if not, then I'm going to close public testimony on this bill. And I think for now, we're going to hold on to it. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate the time. Okay, let's move on. Still talking more fish here.
Public hearing was open and closed.
Yes, it's closed. House Bill 204 will be next. It's the Salmon and Herring Product Tax Credit. This is Representative Osterman's bill. If you want to join us, sir. Love to have you. Bring up your trusty staff. We will, I'll need a motion on this, it looks like. Senator Fairclough?
The CS, Mr. Chairman.
CS, yeah. Version P.
Mr. Chairman, I move the CS for sponsor substitute for House Bill Number 204, Finance, 28-LS-0463/P, before the committee.
Okay. Brief at ease. Okay, we're back. Senator Firkloff, if you could please, we're going to retract your previous motion and ask for a new motion for the CS version Y. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Senate CS for the CS for Senate substitute for House Bill number 204, Finance 28-LS0463/Y before the committee.
Okay. Any objections? Seeing and hearing none. The sponsor, are you prepared to explain the changes in the CS?
For the record, my name is Astrid Rose. I'm staff to Rep. Osterman. The changes in the CS were a recommendation of our legislative legal department. They brought it to our attention this weekend that there needed to be some additions in the title, and then also Section 9 is an addition which fixes the uncodified law. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Questions for the sponsor?
Underlying bill.
I'm sorry? Go ahead, Des.
Mr. Chairman, I have no questions on the CS as far as the changes go. I would like to hear about the underlying bill.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Well, we have the CS. We have the changes. So let's discuss the bill itself right now. So go ahead, Representative Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Finance Committee. My name is Alan Osterman. I'm a representative from District 35, which includes Kodiak and then the Central Gulf of Alaska, all the way from Yakutat back to Kodiak. The underlying reason for the bill, and it'll take me just a couple of minutes, but to give you some history of why the bill's before you. Most of you already know that the salmon tax credits have been in existence for a long time. And there's been a lot of changes that have taken place. A lot of investment have taken place in the state of Alaska and in the seafood industry because of the tax credit. A few years back, there was a request from some fishermen in the Togiak area, which is the southwest of Alaska, in reference to what they call foregone harvest. There was a lot of salmon going up the rivers that were not being harvested because there was no harvesting capability out there. They came forward and said if we had a herring fishery that had a market, we think that the processors will come forward and actually look at both herring and salmon at the same time, giving them an economic reality of being able to do all or both products and then bringing processing forward. And so we got a few $100,000 set aside here about 4 years ago through the Senate that actually sent the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute out to take a hard look at how and if possible can you market herring that hasn't been marketed other than how they've been processing it in the past in reference to basically bait or a roe. And all the carcasses, they need to get ground up or dumped. And so we thought that those carcasses could become valuable or should be valuable. So we've spent the last few years looking at the market, and the market is showing a very strong desire for another protein to be on the marketplace, particularly in the U.S. The International Food Aid Program that the U.S. has, where the federal government has been buying soybeans and all the rest of those things and putting them around the world and selling them. So that was the genesis of why we decided we wanted to add herring to it and extend the tax credit. And that's basically what this bill is, an extension of the tax credit on salmon and add herring. The other thing that's in there is in the process of all of our seafood processing, there's a lot of byproduct that comes, all the waste stream that comes out of, and what we have found is that there's also a very strong desire to see that waste stream turned into a usable product. And that usable product that is being looked at very strongly right now is a dry powder. You take all of that waste, you cook it, you extract the water out of it, you get it down to where it's really basically 100% protein in a powder form. one of the reasons that there's a couple different reasons why we wanted to take a look at that. The first reason that we wanted to take a look at is we anticipate that over time that all the fisheries in the state of Alaska, including those outside of 3 miles, will require 100% retention. So right now there's millions and millions of pounds of product that are being dumped into the ocean that are not economically viable, too small, wrong species like a halibut and stuff like that. And so they're going down that road right now in the European Union. So all the European fisheries will be 100% retention within the next 10 years. We anticipate that there's going to be pressure upon Alaska to do the same thing in the United States. We would like to see Alaska get ahead of that curve themselves. So I anticipate that within the next few years there's going to be a strong push to have 100% retention. So what do you do with that stuff if you have 100% retention? There's no market value to it. You bring it ashore, you grind it up, and you dump it back in, or do you grind it up and make a product out of it? And so that was one of the things. And then along came EPA in the last couple of years, and they're telling all the processors you can't dump anything in the ocean anymore. You have to either take it to what they call a bio-dry plant and you have to cook it up and make chicken feed out of it or do something. We think there's a more value to it in dry 100% protein that can help feed the world with rather than just grind it up into chicken feed. So I think there's a number of different reasons why we should continue as the state of Alaska to pursue the maximum usage of our seafoods.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Osterman. Senator Fairclough?
I have more of an economic perspective issue that I just wonder for consideration. Specifically when you're looking at fishing and we allow tax credits for an enormous amount of the revenue that the fishing community collects and then reinvests, are we in some way holding down the price of fish because and what consumers will pay around the globe? Are we interfering in the economics of actually having the base cost of the fish actually rise by continuing to offer credits to do that? I just wonder as far as economics and a macro perspective. I know our effort is to try to incentivize, but I wonder if we're depressing the price of fish.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fairclough, Senator Fairclough, I think you'll hear more when the department comes up and testifies on the bill on the economics, what's going on. But if you look at the global aspects of the seafood industry, and that's what we really are as Alaska, we're in the global marketplace. And the competition in the global marketplace, if you look at what's going on in farm fish that are competing with the wild stocks we have up here, that is holding the price to where it's holding it. Because it is a global market, and you get a big pen and raise a bunch of fish and go and process them. The economics for them are a lot cheaper than they are for the state of Alaska. Now, that would kind of indicate to you that the state of Alaska should start raising fish, but at the same point in time, you got to protect the wild stocks that we have and make sure that they're the ones that are the driving force. I'm not opposed to having some type of farming in Alaska, and I think we should do it to expand the economic or the base for fishing, but I think it has to really be had of a hard look at it, and it would take time to pull that together. So, but I don't disagree with you.
But,
Mr. Chairman, just for to parking lot the issue for later, I don't think that we can solve it today. But it feels like over the last 8 years that I've had the privilege of being part of this legislative body, that credits aren't considered cash. And we have been playing per se in specific industries to try to offer incentives in a variety of fields around the state to promote Alaska's ability to compete. And I just wonder if we're actually achieving what we want in those investments or if we're not creating something else. And I guess what I'm thinking of, Mr. Chairman, is the Carolinas and how the federal government, I don't know if they still do it, so I don't want to bang on the federal government, if they still subsidize tobacco farms and then all the health costs for there. I know that has nothing to do with the good quality of what we're talking about today, but I'm just saying it's where we're changing the market conditions, so, and we're depressing the cost of something, and it changes behavior for the better or for the worse. I understand for those who make money on the issue that the tax credit provides their families economic benefit. I just wonder whether all of our tax credits are accomplishing what we want them to accomplish. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would wonder if the Senate Finance Committee should take a hard look at all the credits that we have on the books and how they're being utilized, and then to what benefit for Alaskans.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Senator Clough. And actually, I'm surprised. I thought we were going to try to eliminate some tax credits this year, and I think the opposite's happened. At some point in time, you got to be concerned about the revenue, and if you keep giving tax credits, that impacts your revenue. Representative Ostring, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I totally agree with you. There's a bill in the House that has been working towards that right now, with taking all of the tax credits and putting them on a yearly, whatever that number years, review, setting up a cost-benefit ratio formula so that you can actually take a look and see. And I totally agree that that should be done. We've passed it out of the House Finance. It's sitting in House Rules right now. It's House Bill 306. And at some point in time, if it doesn't get through the House and over to you guys, that's something I think it should come back, and somebody need to revise that and get into what those tax credits are, including everything. I mean, we've got tax credits in every industry we have here.
Yeah. Okay. Is there additional questions for the sponsor? Yeah, I was kind of hoping to see that House bill, but it's getting a little late in the game. Yeah. All right, let's go to public testimony then.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have to go back to another.
Yeah, of course you do. Things. Yes. Go do some good work over there. Okay. Folks who decided to testify here, Vince. I know Vince is here. Vince, yeah, please, if you could put your name on the record and your affiliation and proceed for the testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Vince O'Shea, and I'm the Vice President in Alaska for the Pacific Seafood Processors Association. Five of our member companies operate 18 salmon processing plants in Alaska, and I'm here to speak in our strong support for HB 204. I know you have a time issue here, and I just leave it at that, Mr. Chairman. We have a letter in the record, and I'd also offer to answer any questions that you or the committee might have, sir.
Okay, very good. Any questions? Seeing none, thanks. Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to review the spring forecast on the tax, and I'm looking at the fishery tax, and I see that it's down. And so I'm wondering, we had an increase in overall fisheries income. Wait a minute, I'm going the wrong way. If you could just speak to the fishery tax, I think it's going up, and it just went down. It's projected to go down in 15. In 14, it was at $27,400,000. It looks like it's going to be at $26 million as far as the forecast goes. So I'm wondering if it's the actual pounds that we're bringing in for our fleet, or if there's something else that's happening there.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fairclough, thank you for that question. So what we're paying in a state landing tax is a combination of the volume of fish that we're buying as well as the price of those fish. So both of those numbers can be changing. Unfortunately, you can't see it, but I brought with me a graph that shows over the last 10 years the increased value that we're paying for Alaska salmon. And we're not price makers in this market. We're price takers in reality. As was mentioned before, it's a global market. So the change in total revenue, and this is a claim against the taxes that we're paying, landing taxes, is fluctuations in how much fish are in the quota.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good. Thank you. Don't see any other questions. Thank you, Vince.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, staying here in Juneau, Mark, is it Mark Pena with Ocean Beauty? Or maybe they're online, I'm sorry. Yeah, Mark Palmer, looks like. Is that right? Okay.
Yeah,
somehow I got signed in
Mark
here
Palmer,
in Juneau.
I'm online.
All right, go ahead, Mark. I had you here in Juneau, but go ahead if you're online. Go ahead with your testimony.
My name is Mark Palmer. I'm the president and CEO of Ocean Beauty Seafoods, also testifying in support of House Bill 204. I think it's a bill that's worked. When you look at the history of where salmon prices were in the last 10 years and where they've gone, it certainly hasn't depressed prices. We've seen grounds price increase year on year to where the value of the salmon harvest is over double what it was at the point in time that this bill was introduced. I think one thing I want to stress is that this isn't a subsidy of existing markets. This bill stimulated market diversification through product diversification. We were overly dependent on too few products, canned and frozen H&G fish, and we've diversified our product mix tremendously, and it's opened up new markets around the world. That's the genesis of this, and what we continue to do forward if we apply that to herring. There's a risk in opening new markets, and this helps us speed up the time it takes us to create new products and open new markets. And one of the challenges in Alaska with some of the seasonal fisheries is the kind of investment that you have to make in a very short period of time. We're going to make those investments. We're going to open new markets. Some of the things we're going to do will work and some won't, but this has taken a certain amount of the risk away of making those big capital investments. It's created a lot of jobs, and it's created a lot more tax revenue for the communities that we're in and revenue for the fleet. Those are all positives to the state, and we see this as a continuation of that and further investment in all of the shoreside communities that we're in.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the testimony, Mark. Any questions? Okay. Seeing none, thank you for joining us today. Also in Seattle, looks like we got Joe, is it Plesha? Plesha? With Target?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Joe.
For the record, my name is Joe Plesha, and I work for Trident Seafoods. I'd like to briefly speak in strong support of the legislation as well. And I'd like to just point out that the Environmental Protection Agency is considering amending the existing effluent limitation guidelines and requiring screening of all seafood waste in many communities in Alaska. The result of that is that the industry will have to produce a fish meal or some other byproduct with its fish waste in the future, it very much appears like. And so this bill is important, I believe, for the Alaska salmon industry to remain competitive on a world market basis. And with that short comment, I'd be happy to answer any questions that the committee might have.
Any questions from the committee? Seeing none. I think we're good. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
All right. Was there anyone else who wanted to testify? Seeing. Okay. Yep. Sorry, I didn't have you on my list here. So that's. If you could, please put your name on the record.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Joe Jacobson. I'm the director of the Division of Economic Development. I just want to go on the record and say the department is supportive of this legislation. I also want to kind of reiterate some of what Mark Palmer said earlier on. I mean, without having the option to just kind of turn on the spigot and increase production with our wild fisheries in the state, the only real way to increase value for the state is by increasing the value of the underlying product. And right now, the way the state's been successful in doing that is through programs that are concurrently trying to improve the quality of the product, improving the marketing of the quality of the product through the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, and through product diversification. If you look back 20 years, I mean, the industry, again, was largely dependent upon canned salmon and H&G product, which was largely exported in many cases. And one of the reasons we've seen fish prices go up dramatically is because there's a lot more different products that are really appealing to different market segments around the world. Prior to taking over this position, I was the international director for the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. across the world, you had people saying, well, previously I wasn't really interested in that product, but now I can get so many different items, fillets that are frozen. The quality of those fillets are better. They're competing with farm product that has a better consistency or had better consistency in the past. And really what you've seen is over the past 10 years in particular, the price to the fishermen of the state has gone up dramatically. Permit values have gone up. People have been able to invest in their communities because of the value of those permits. Their net wealth has increased. And we've seen larger resident participation in the fisheries. So this isn't a cure-all, but it's one of three major components that have really supported fish prices across the state. It's also very targeted in terms of looking at new can size production. If you've been to a grocery store recently and looked at a tall can of sockeye salmon, it's over $11 in most cases. Not only are you getting a pound of fish, which for most markets these days is just too much for the average family, it's also just a lot of money. So by incentivizing the reduction of the can size, it allows us to maintain a canned market where we might otherwise lose it. And then as Joe Plesha mentioned, with the upcoming, I think they're almost impending in some respects, EPA effluent limitation guidelines, there's going to be significant expenses required by the industry to meet those new requirements. And one of the specific provisions within this bill is that it's not going to incentivize putting in something just to collect and strain and dump the waste. It is the transformation of a waste byproduct into a saleable good. And if you look at the example of Iceland and other countries, they've been able to take a lot of things that have been discarded in the past and transform them into saleable goods that in some cases exceed the value of the flesh themselves. So we think this is a good bill. It'll help support the fishing industry, it'll help support a resident fleet, it'll put more money in the pockets of fishermen around the state, and I think in the long run it'll actually return more money back to the state. If you look at the amount of this credit over the years, I don't have the specific numbers in front of me, but I'd be happy to provide them. They stay pretty stable, but the value of the amount of net revenues from the seafood industry coming back has generally increased steadily along with the prices. So with that, I'll open it up to any questions.
Okay. Senator Dunleavy and then Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you see this tax credit as a permanent tax credit or one to transition the industry from dumping waste and now being compelled by the EPA and others to do something with that? Do you see it as a transition piece or a permanent piece?
Senator Dunleavy through the chair. I think that there's obviously been a lot of discussion about tax credits and their role in economic development and in such. I think right now this is certainly a incentivizing a further transformation of the industry. I think we have a long ways to go. I don't think the state across the board is capturing as much value as it could. I don't think the quality is as good across the state as it could be. I think we've made great strides over the past 10 years, but there's still a long ways to go. So, assuming the industry reaches a plateau and there's nothing more that the state can play a role in incentivizing the transformation of the industry, I do see it as a transformational piece. That doesn't mean that 5 years down the road there may not be another issue that comes around, but this does have a sunset date. I think that with that sunset date in place, it should be viewed as a transitional piece, and it can be revisited at that time.
Okay. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joe, I just wanted to go back to the first off, I want to preface my comments that I'm not an expert in the seafood industry. I believe I have a good working knowledge of after having been around it a lot most of my life. But I want to go back to your canned comment from the 14 and three quarters down to 7.5. And it just something to point out, not every processor has the ability to freeze all the fish that they bring in. And we need to keep that, in my opinion, we need to keep that can component competitive, if you will, so we can utilize and make the entire pack, not only for the fishermen. Everybody benefits when you can utilize the whole pack. And so if this is what we have to do to stay competitive, get in these 7.5-ounce cans, I'm supportive of that. And also, in that light, you look at Ocean Beauty and what they're doing
in revitalizing that fishery in Caltag, taking a fishery that was had been non-competitive, gone, come back in with some new technology in bringing that fishery back on the way they handle those fish, process those fish, because I'm certainly not getting ahead of Senator Olson or Senator Hoffman at all. That's jobs, economic development in rural Alaska, and those people need those jobs, and it brings a whole host of positives that I can't describe here today.
Senator Bishop, through the chair, just as a follow-up on that, I mean, this I think the whole intent of this, or one of the key components of this, is to make sure that the canned market remains competitive. Currently, I don't know what the exact percentage is, but I would be surprised if it's less than 95% of the pack is in 7.5-ounce and 14.75-ounce cans. And even the 7.5-ounce can is too big for a lot of marketplaces. And really, with sockeye salmon, it's the value of sockeye has grown so much that even a 7.5-ounce can is, I mean, pretty expensive for the average person. You can still maintain your market share by reducing the can size. And if you look at a lot of other products, you have 3.5-ounce, you have 5-ounce. There's a variety of different things. This bill does not incentivize anything that would go to producing the same can sizes that we already have been producing for the past 100 years. It would only go to producing cans that are not 7.5 or 14.75-ounce, thereby supporting the canned industry, which is essential because it just costs too much to freeze and process in a lot of places, and also the throughput that's needed from the can market. It's a critical component of the industry.
You know, the only thing I'm having a hard time wrapping my hands around is that if the bigger cans aren't selling and we need to go to the smaller cans, isn't that something the private sector would just do on its own without a state subsidy or state tax credit? I mean, it just seems like that's business. That's the free market.
Mr. Chair, I believe you're absolutely correct in that. I think there are a variety of factors coming into place, and I think it's really one of those things that you're seeing the EPA come about. You're seeing an continued investment in fillet lines, in other value-added processing. And there's only so much that can really get done at one time. Everybody has a limited amount of budget that they can invest in their plants. I think what this bill really does is speeds the transformation and really puts emphasis on the areas that the industry has indicated are the greatest expense.
Well, I appreciate that, but obviously EPA's in everybody's lives, mining industry, oil industry, states industry, construction industry. Okay, very good. Thank you for your testimony. Was there anyone else who wanted to testify? Anybody else here in Juneau? Okay, then we'll close public testimony. Is there any other questions from the committee members? Okay, seeing and hearing none, then we are going to hold this bill over as well. So we can get started until we hear bills on House Bill 379. This is Representative Nagyek. I appreciate you being here and staying here with us this long. So I would at least like you to introduce the bill for the committee and tell us what it does and why we should support it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chairman Meyer and committee members, for the record, my name is Representative Benjamin Nile. Thank you for hearing the bill today. House Bill 379 seeks to make a legislative change to the formula on how a municipality may use oil and gas property tax revenue. This bill, Senator Olson and I have championed, gives municipalities with oil and gas properties the flexibility to use the revenue for their operating budget. This is a clear-cut bill, but there's a long history in the law's origin. With your permission, I will briefly recap how we got to where we are today. When the oil and gas property tax laws were passed in 1973, a cap was written into state law about how much property tax revenue could be used for our municipal operating budget. It was a struggle in the early days to form the notional borough. We were sued by the state of Alaska and by the oil companies. They said we weren't capable of governing. That was 40 years ago. Today, I think we're doing just fine. With this wealth, the borough has built schools, roads, airports, and utilities. Additionally, we pay for services that in other regions are provided by the state. For example, we provide search and rescue, police, and wildlife management. These borough departments cooperate with the state, saving the state time and resources. The North Slope Borough has always kept property taxes lower than the state cap. Over the past 34 years, that lower rate has amounted to about $1 billion returned to the state. We do this because we want to be a good partner. The borough's intent is to retain the current mill rate, but this bill gives them the flexibility to move revenue from debt service to the operating budget. We no longer need as much revenue for debt service. We need funds to maintain existing infrastructure. So, Mr. Chairman, that brings us back to House Bill 379. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, and I ask for your support to move this legislation.
Okay, appreciate that, Representative Nagyak. You know, we are going to have some questions, but we do need to go to our floor session. Appreciate the introduction. We will take this bill up right away as soon as we come back this afternoon. We're scheduled to come back at 1:30. And the commissioner, if you or somebody can be here as well, I apologize. I know we kept you here all day, morning as well.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Nagyak. With that, we're adjourned till 1:30.